I am honored and privileged to serve as your leader today at the pulpit. I feel like I have really big shoes to fill, and I'm very excited to be asked by the worship committee to be a part of this experience. So thank you to everybody. My sermon today is about the joys and struggles of service. From my earliest moments as a child, service has been an important part of my upbringing and education. I was raised in the social justice tradition of the Catholic Church, and serving those less fortunate was an important part of my mother's and, to some extent, my father's daily activities. Whether it was volunteering for Birthright or the local homeless shelter, or leading scouting troops or supporting the local police athletic league, we were always taught that no matter how hard it might be for us, there was always those who had it worse off and who needed our help. So this mantra followed me when I went to college at a Jesuit institution, Marquette University in Milwaukee, which fully embraces the idea of service and community. And Marquette's been lauded at the national level for the level of activism and service that their students engage in. While I may have concerns about many aspects of Catholicism, this one single aspect has stayed with me to this day and has truly influenced my core values in a way few other things have done. And as I know I've shared with you here before, one thing of many that has drawn me to the UU Church has been the mission of social justice and social activism and volunteerism that is central to our faith. Our activities in the areas of food outreach and LGBTQ activism and support are issues near and dear to my heart. And for me, finding a church that would give me an outlet to focus my service and help teach my children of the importance of service was, if you'll pardon the word, a godsend. It's not as if I ever found it difficult to find something in which to get involved, but I loved the idea of a place where I could go for spiritual respite that also shared my values of social justice and service. So my history of service has really ebbed and flowed over the years, but giving back has always been an important part of me. In high school, I was voted as someone who had done the most for my class. Later, I was one of three students in my college who received an award for balancing both academic excellence and service through volunteerism in the community and on campus. There were some years where I wasn't involved in any activities at all, you know, particularly once I hit the working world in my 20s, my priorities shifted there for a little while. And then I hit grad school and the volunteerism started again. I got an award for service while getting my MBA and more committee work while I was getting my PhD, blah, blah, blah. You know, and even now, as I submitted my tenure portfolio a few weeks ago, I was told that the service aspect of my packet was way beyond the expectation of a junior faculty member. And to be honest, I get exhausted just thinking about it. It's been a long couple of years. Can't wait. But this sermon is really not meant to be a treatise in the way that I've served the community as a bragging point, because really, on the contrary, what I want to use is my experiences as a springboard to share some things that I've learned of late. So bear with me, we're taking you on a little journey, and we're going to talk about the importance of balancing both service and self-care. Going back to my opening comments, I told you that my mother and at times my father were involved in service in our community, and at one point in time, they were actively involved in an organization called Marriage Encounter, first as participants and later as session leaders and teachers. Marriage Encounter, for those of you who don't know, is a movement within the Catholic Church that focuses on marriage enhancement to improve communication and revitalize what they call Christian marriage. It developed in Spain in 1952 and in 1971, spread like wildfire to the United States, and is still in existence today worldwide, multiple countries, multiple languages. It's still a force to be reckoned with in the church. Marriage Encounter involved many weekends away from my parents and evenings doing writing and preparation for those weekend sessions. And while this may not sound completely unreasonable in our hustle and bustle day and age, for kids who were until recently used to a stay-at-home mom, this was a difficult change for us. So much so that at times when my father was upstairs researching and writing his lesson plans, we could barely tiptoe around him without him exploding that it was too noisy and he couldn't concentrate. And after a few incidents like this, it was family meeting time. My siblings and I felt like we couldn't interact with our parents the way we were used to, and that there was more tension at home than there was joy in the service that they were given. So after that meeting, my parents left the service of Marriage Encounter, but it was an important lesson to all of us about how service can, at times, take over our lives in an unhealthy way. But it's kind of funny, though, how life repeats itself. And sometimes it takes a sledgehammer to realize that you're doing the exact same thing that you had issues with in the past when you were on the receiving end. So learned that, had my little sledgehammer. So fast forward my life. Moving here a few years ago on the cusp of a significant relationship ending due to my former partner's stroke. Her decision to end the relationship absolutely devastated me to the point of numbness, and one way I could feel alive was to get involved, keeping myself busy so I didn't have to remember how awful it felt. And one thing led to another, volunteering for HRC, which I'll talk a bit more about in a few moments, and for an organization called Bikers Against Child Abuse, along with being a single mom of two, having a full-time job that, of course, kept me busy as well. And once you get on the express train, sometimes it's hard to step off, particularly when things get crazy busy. The high of giving to others can be addictive. It feels good to see that your actions help others. It's amazing when you see the gratitude on their faces and that you know you made a difference in someone's life. And again, as you use, we're called to service, right? We're called to fight injustice in the world, so of course, when someone asks, I'll be there, I'll do it. And then the train wreck happens. So before I move forward, let me take a few moments to talk about HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, as today has been designated HRC Sunday by our worship committee. HRC is the largest organization in the United States fighting for LGBT civil rights. Is it the only game in town? No. But it's certainly one of the most influential in Washington, D.C., where they engage in political action and lobbying on behalf of the LGBT community. Along with lobbying, they also run a foundation that advocates for safe schools at the K-5 level, hospital rights for same-sex couples, ranks businesses on their LGBT friendliness through our buyer's guide, and yes, there is an iPhone app for that. It strives to promote diversity in the community. They're not perfect, but then again, who or what organization is? We work hard in local communities running awareness and fundraising campaigns. A month ago, as I know I announced here, we had our gala dinner, we broke all local fundraising records, and today we have our annual bowling event at Tropicana Lane, so if anybody's still interested and you wanna come talk to me. We're seen every year at Pride, and this year we broke our membership and fundraising goals and also had a big presence in our parade. Each year we honor an individual and an organization that are known for fighting for LGBT civil rights, and this year we honored Bert Coleman, and we also honored Cheryl Wayland and her organization, SAGE, that advocates for elder LGBT issues. We know that certainly growing older in the society has its challenges, being LGBT has its challenges, but when you see the intersection of the two, you realize that the work that Cheryl and SAGE is doing is really phenomenal, and I certainly encourage you to get involved in the organization, as Cheryl's words at our local dinner when we were honoring her were really compelling about what we need to do to help our community. I also want to take a moment to ask you all to keep Bert Coleman in your prayers. About 2 weeks ago, he had a massive stroke. He's currently in the hospital and unfortunately is not expected to make it. With your collective energy, we can wish him some peace and his partner some strength, because they're navigating an all too familiar to me scenario, having been there, done that a few years ago. HRC has fought to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell, has fought hard for workplace equality and marriage rights, and as well as working hard to elect fair-minded politicians at the state and local and the federal level. Our organization is filled not only with activist LGBT individuals, but also with an enormous amount of straight allies who believe that your love, who you love, should not dictate your right to a job or your right to be married, and that all persons, regardless of their orientation, or gender identity, deserve to live a full, happy, and open life. Memberships are pretty reasonable. I have set up a table outside in the Kate Worker Room. If you have any questions about HRC, feel free to ask. I can talk to you about membership issues and things like that. Okay. So with that behind me, let me return to my story. I spoke about the inevitable train wreck that occurs when we mindlessly get caught up in doing things and forget to stop and look around. And that's pretty much what happened to me in the last year. I've been running and running and running, and my stress level was going up, and the kids were struggling with a few things, and I felt like I was barely breathing some days between kids' activities, my job and its unique demands, my community service activities, and the struggles the kids were having, and et cetera, et cetera. And then my wonderful best friend and girlfriend strategically asked me a question that changed the way I saw my activities. What are you trying to numb yourself from with all of your activities? What are you hiding from? And I came to a sudden stop, so much so that I think I probably gave myself whiplash. It was a fabulous question and one that I had never asked myself, and it was asked with such love and caring and honesty that I knew it was something that I had to address. Why was I engaged in all these activities? If the activities were feeling like a chore and were not joyful, why would I engage in something that was clearly causing me and my kids more harm than good? And what was I numbing myself from? What was I compensating for with all the giving? I was drained from making sure others were taken care of and had neglected to first take care of myself and second, take care of those around me who I loved and cared for more than anything. I had mindlessly done the exact same thing my parents had done 30-odd years before, neglecting myself and my loved ones all in the name of service. I was addicted to the high of giving while forgetting to give to myself. Because, you know, we're told all our lives that taking care of ourselves is, you know, it's selfish. Well, it's not, because in that age-old adage, if mama ain't happy, ain't no one happy, loosely translates to mean, if you're not whole and happy and taking care of yourself, those around you are not happy, nor healthy, nor getting what they want and need from you. Even when you're busting your butt giving to others, they aren't getting your best either, because you're run down and you're working on an autopilot. Don't we deserve the best? Don't our loved ones deserve the best? Don't the people we aim to serve deserve our best? So I did my work. I explored my reasons for the flurry of activity with which I was engaged. I got some good answers and some insight into myself and decided it was time to simplify. And I take a really deep breath there, because simplifying is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. But I realized that I didn't have to be the head of the committee. I could be a member and help out occasionally, and that's okay. I didn't have to be moving every day of the week. I could say no and still feel good that I was doing what I could to help make the world a better place. So I'm sure there are some of you that may be out there going, see, now I know why I don't volunteer for anything. It's too hard, it's too draining, it's too, you know, insert excuse. Well, sorry to tell you, that's not my message, and it's not the takeaway today. What I encourage you to do is not only to say no when appropriate, but it's also imperative that we learn how to say yes. Serving others demonstrates empathy. It's an essential part of our human experience and a central part of a collective society. It's also a central value of our faith. I recall the words of Edward Everett Hale, "I am only one, but I am still one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." Find something. Anything that you can do. If you can't come to break bread on fourth Saturday meal, donate food. We just heard Catherine tell us that. If you can't march in the Pride Parade in June, make a donation to HRC or some other worthy LGBT charity to support the people who are willing and able to be more active in the movement for equality. Do something, as Dorothy Day said in our first reading. Be mindful, but be mindful and live deliberately, and ensure you care for yourself in the process, as implied by Thoreau when he said in his reading, "Nor do I wish to practice resignation unless it is quite necessary." We can't do everything, but we can do something. It's okay to say no when service drains us or makes us run in circles trying to get it all done. It's okay to say no and be more mindful when you realize that the flurry of activity may be a smokescreen for another deeper issue that we're running from. We need to show ourselves the same gentle care and consideration and service that we want and need to show others. And it's okay to take care of ourselves first, because we do no one any service if we are draining ourselves in an unhealthy way. I was fortunate enough and grateful that I had someone who loved me and knew me like a book, who could strategically ask me the question that changed the way I view things. But we can't always depend on an external source for inspiration. How can we all ensure that we've engaged in self-care so that we have something to give others? And how can we check in with ourselves regularly to examine our motives for our actions and ensure we are engaged for the right reasons and not just moving forward mindlessly and blindly, blissfully numb from reality? Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun, argues that we must deal with our issues as they are presented to us, because if we continue to run from them, whether consciously or unconsciously, they follow us and haunt us, really, until we deal with those issues for years, a lifetime if necessary. So 5 years after my partner had her stroke and ended our relationship, I finally had to look at the devastating impact that that had on my life and the subsequent actions I took as I tried to pull myself and my life together. Mindfulness is a practice, as we say in Buddhism. We have to practice and practice and practice until we get it right. And it may take a lifetime, but the journey and the benefits outweigh the challenges. So we need to examine why we aren't serving, and we need to examine why we are serving, all while being gentle to ourselves and to those around us. And I hope your journey is as rewarding as mine.